Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Switchcast season. Well, it's not season six anymore. That was last week, and it's not season seven yet. It's like season six, seven. I don't even know what that means, but I hear the kids are all doing it. This is our interim episode. I was actually just looking at Lamborghini 400 GT Interim at Broad Arrow. That's a car that I really want. I don't really care if 350, 400 Interim, whatever. I don't know.
They're just so beautiful.
Such a beautiful body style, and it's a tenth of the price of a comparable Ferrari short wheelbase or whatever. Anyway, welcome back to Switchcast Season Interim Episode. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. We've got Ethan Huffnagel, our international executive producer extraordinaire, and Dan Doucette, our technical advisor in-house, who will be joining us later, or I guess whenever he feels like it. He has a mic in his lap, so he can...
Yep, I do. I'm here.
...interject when he feels like it. This episode is a little bit... Well, see if you notice any differences, but we're going to tell you what they are. I'm going to give you a cheat sheet. We are going back to our older format, which is a little bit less structured and a single kind of one take recording like we used to do with the live shows. Now, as an audio listener, you may not notice a whole lot of difference, but we enjoy the flow of things more. And the last couple seasons, we were trying to cater more to the YouTube format. And I think we lost a little bit of the magic of just the spice of Switchcast. So we're aiming to get that back because our core audience really is the audio podcast listeners and the patrons on Patreon. So we thank you and hope you continue to enjoy our show. And I think we just have more fun with the old format. So Switchcast is a podcast where we know what we're talking about despite evidence to the contrary. We're the automotive podcast that's not just for car people. In fact, it's almost better if you're not a car person, because then you can't present evidence to the contrary of us knowing what we're talking about. You'll just take our word for it, which is what we want.
Yeah, because then we just end up sounding like we're having a good time.
Yeah. Let's see. If you enjoy this podcast, please help us out with the algorithms. Like, subscribe, share, review it. It all helps us be found by more people, and it doesn't cost you anything, and it doesn't cost us anything. So we love that. We do not do any marketing spend at all. All of our growth is organic, and so we thank you for your loyalty in listening and in doing these things already. We know you have a lot of choices for your entertainment time budget, and we appreciate you choosing us. We have a lot of fun and are happy that we're valued by our listeners, because otherwise we'd just be talking into microphones to ourselves. We'll, as always, start with a warm-up lap. And tonight, because it's an interim show, no sponsors. It's ad-free episode for y'all. So yeah, I know.
Yeah, get out of here, Switch Cars.
We have some continuing sponsors for season seven. We have a couple new ones. We have a couple still in negotiations. So we're excited for the next season. I will say something to note of that, though, just for the sake of discussion. We're on the warm-up lap. I've said this before, but the sponsors that we choose to endorse is not because of what they offer us in terms of money. We've turned down sponsors before, and I was talking about that this weekend with my friend Arnab, who's Mr. like research the best automotive product and buy it. So anything he has, I just buy, because I know he's done all the research already. And so he was talking about like hose reels, good hose reels, whatever. I'm like, oh, no, I've found the best ones. And it's not Giraffe Tools, which is everywhere in the automotive space. They've sponsor a bunch of YouTubers and stuff, and they're kind of out there pushing hard. They asked to sponsor me, to send me a bunch of product to outfit my garage. I'm like, okay, sure, I'll try you out. But they want me to sign this contract that said, well, you have to try it this many. Like, if it doesn't work for your first video, you have to try it again until it works smoothly so you can make a good video. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, my opinion can't be bought. Especially not for a couple of free hose reels.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the one we have at our shop that we paid for is like the ratchet is not working, so it doesn't lock out and it makes terrible noise. And we've had it for like, I don't know, 6-8 months. But I found some on my own that I paid for and paid dearly for. And like, I don't know if they'd pay me, I'd also endorse them, but I just like, there's some integrity behind what we endorse. And so when we say use this company or buy this product, we really, really mean it. Anyway, I hope those of you watching live on Patreon, I know you could watch the State of the Union address tonight, but we're going to have the Switchcast State of the Union, but it's more fun. So it's like the State of the Funyun.
I can't believe you just didn't let that one simmer in the preview. No, we got a, yeah, no, it's a, yep.
I got a call this week. This is why it's a warm-up lap. You got to get your tires hot, check yourself before you wreck yourself.
No, I appreciate all this vamping you're doing is giving me extra time to prepare. So you're really just, thank you for taking one for the team, Doug.
Tyler's in the pit still trying to like, torque his wheels, fill up his oil, make sure, like get his car running.
Did I torque my oil filter crack?
Waiting for the green flag. I got a call this week. Story time. I got a call this week.
Is it time to drink yet?
Yeah, it was close. Close. Why not? Okay. What's fueling this podcast? Tyler, what's fueling it?
Well, I am going to start off with some Lagavulin Offerman Edition, aged in Guinness casks. I am on a tear of finishing bottles that are almost empty. So if we don't finish what's here, Doug gets to drink the rest of it.
Oh boy.
So,
because I don't have to drive. I am drinking some Wild Turkey, anniversary release, 8 years aged, 101 proof, nice low proof for me. And that was brought by our technical advisor. Dan and Tyler are the real bourbon experts here. I got asked a bunch of bourbon questions for my VinWiki AMA, and I'm like, you're asking the wrong person. I can pretend. Okay, story time. I got a call this week to do an appraisal. I do them occasionally. And initially, I said, nah, it's a remote appraisal. I don't really do those. But the guy just wanted to ask me a couple questions. It was a Mallet Corvette. I'm like, oh, okay, interesting. So Chuck Mallet is a tuner, mostly GM products in, I think, Berea, Ohio. Been around forever. He was kind of one of the big three back in the 90s, Mallet, Lingenfelter, and Callaway, doing the stroked engines for the Corvette C5. And they were, you know, lots of shootouts and stuff like that. So they were all going for the most horsepower and blah, blah, blah. So Chuck had the Mallet 435 package C5 Corvette with a giant hood. And some of them had a tubbed rear end and 12-inch wheels and stuff. Really, really cool build. But anyway, this guy has a Mallet Corvette. It was a 396 cubic inch car, not their standard 383. And he said it's apparently the only one he made in that color. And it's light carmine red.
Okay.
I was like, oh, is it a convertible? Yeah, it is. 98. 1 year only. I'm like, yeah, you're speaking my language. 6-speed manual. He's got 373 rear end gears, which is what I have in mind. But I have the Lingenfelter. So, and he's got the oak interior, which is what I have. And I'm like, and the guy's kind of asking, like, what should I have this thing insured for? Because I don't want something to happen to it and it be underinsured. So, you know, he's got a 98, 1 year only, light carmine red, over oak, 396 Mallet Corvette. I've got the brother from another mother, Lingenfelter 383, light carmine red, over oak. But mine, ironically, has mallet wheels. So anyway, I told him there's no number too big.
Yeah.
It's $100,000. It's priceless.
It's one of one.
So I kind of like initially I was like, I don't feel like doing appraisals right now. And so, but then when I talked to him, I'm like, I found my new best friend. Like, I almost want to go to Kentucky to just visit, take Gretchen there and be like, that's
the cars twins. Can kiss.
Oh, it's silly, but the tariffs this week, the tariffs that were instituted last year by the Trump administration were overturned by the Supreme Court, but only some of them, only the fentanyl tariffs. So I guess not the reciprocal tariffs, not the Section 232 tariffs. So initially people thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to get a refund for the classic car that I imported. Well, it doesn't seem like that is actually to be the case because we already tried to apply through one of our customs brokers that brought in a car, and they clarified the language and said, nope, doesn't apply because it's not a – the Supreme Court did not cancel the Section 232 tariffs, which is what classic cars are imported under. But it almost doesn't matter anyway because I was chasing a bunch of cars in Europe and Canada. I'm like, ooh, sweet. Let's – buy them all up now. No tariffs. Well, Trump didn't waste any time in reinstituting a blanket 10% tariff and then changed it to 15% this afternoon. So I just not this afternoon, the same afternoon. So he's shooting from the hip here, and it's really annoying that it applies to classic cars at all because those have nothing to do with manufacturing in the current state. But whatever. Frustrating. Very frustrating. So.
Just always feels like us car people are a market that gets constantly shafted because we either make a lot of noise if people hate our exhausts or our racetracks or whatever, but it's such a small group, or we just get squashed because we're not big enough to make exceptions for.
Right. Right. I just don't understand why anything more than 5 years old of any product of any type is subject to a tariff. It's not competing with new manufacturing.
They want you to buy new, Doug.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's it.
The money that you spend on a used older item doesn't go to the companies that that employ the lobbyists that are talking to the people who make the decisions. That's what.
Well, then it should only apply to used items like Ohio does.
That'd be too obvious.
Sales yes. tax and lack of a sales tax credit on a used car. Ugh. Then that pushes you to buy new. Note about Epic VIN. So we've talked about that like supplemental vehicle history report in the past quite a bit. And I wanted to, I may have addressed this before, but I don't think I did. I realized a couple weeks ago that Epic VIN, who we are an affiliate for, and you can find our affiliate link in the show description. It's like supplemental vehicle history reports. It shows you different things than Carfax does. They do not pull from IAAI, which is the insurance auto auctions insurance. I don't know what the second I is for, international. But the places that do pull from that currently show up on Google. So Epic VIN is not the be-all end-all for vehicle research, but neither is Carfax. Neither is Googling the VIN. Neither is VinWiki, but you need all of them. In some capacity, it's like countermeasures for cannonballing. People are like, "Oh, what's one countermeasure that is it?" I'm like, there is no one. Like, there's some that you need more often, and then there's a CB radio or the police scanner that'll save you like once in 3,000 miles. But that once that it saves you is absolutely worth having it the whole time. And so, yes, Epic VIN doesn't show you everything you need. Neither does VinWiki, but my goodness, we still use them every time. And the times that they do save us by pulling up some crazy history on a car that doesn't show up on Carfax or Google is like, I'm so glad we have this. And for the price, it's like 1/5 of Carfax for dealers for an unlimited package. So I don't know how every dealer doesn't like do this extra research beyond Carfax. But anyway, that was just a side note, kind of a disclaimer of, you know, not everything is there, but it's just an additional tool in the belt, which is what we've talked about all the time. It's like everything that you have to buy cars is one tool in the belt, and you need the whole friggin' tool belt.
Well, I think a car is such a complicated thing potentially, and there's a lot of, and I think the outcome, if there's a problem, is much greater. You know, if you're buying a used piece of computer equipment, I always go to tech stuff. Like if you're buying a used GPU on eBay, it can be a lot of money. There's less stuff that can go wrong, and it's probably doesn't really matter if it's been idled in the cold for, you know, such and such time. The borers aren't going to score. Like, there's just less things to screw up, and it's less of a problem if something goes wrong. Like, yes, you might be out $1,000, which is a lot of money, but on a car,
doesn't
it's
matter
thousands.
If an adult owned a GPU.
Yeah, like that. That was, I should have just said that, but exactly. Like, who cares? You know. So
you definitely don't want one that's been used in the rain, though.
Correct.
Like Corvettes. That's a big no-no for GPUs.
Although for GPUs, it doesn't really matter if it's a one of one, because you put it in a case and don't look at it. So nobody really checks out your GPU.
I like when people check out my GPU.
Sure, man.
Okay. And our Patreon topic for our patrons, and if you're not a Patreoner, you can join us at patreon.com/switchcast. And our Patreon exclusive topic is cars that look cooler than they are / look better than they drive. So that'll be a fun, fun discussion. Aston Martin is broken, but I have an idea on how to fix it. Why is it broken? Well, we've known it's been broken for a long time. In fact, I'm not sure that Aston Martin has ever turned a significant profit. What was it? 2018 was the last year I think they turned a profit. And before that, it was like 2010.
And they were just constantly struggling through the decades of their history, making beautiful cars, but seemingly never having the money to do it.
Correct. So one of the least profitable overtime companies in the automotive sphere, but man, have they made beautiful, beautiful cars. But right now is a particularly dark time in Aston Martin's history, as they seem to be teetering on the verge of insolvency. And SSOReport.com, which is, man, we quote them quite often, really, really good analysis of what's going on with Aston Martin. And we won't read the whole article or anything near that. We'll put the link in the bio. It's a very, very good article. Lots and lots of numbers, financial, what is when you put a bunch of letters together and they stand for things.
Acronym.
Acronyms. Thank you. Yeah. I'm terrible at math and English. So anyway, the author is talking about what's wrong with Aston Martin, and their projections for 2025 were way off. They projected growth. They projected that they would actually make a profit. They projected that their gross margin would improve, that their overall volumes would increase, and none of those things were true. The most notable is that they said that their adjusted EBIT would be positive in fiscal year 2025. EBIT is, you know, EBITDA minus the duh.
And I don't think it was positive, was it?
No, it was negative 184 million pounds, you which see, is like $400 or $500 million.
When I was reading through rate. That, that negative sign was very small and I skipped over it at first. I was like, oh, hey, they're not doing too bad. And then yikes.
The first time I read it, where he first quoted it, it was in parentheses, which I know is financial speak for negative.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought it was positive and then I had to go back and go, oh, whoa, that's really, really bad.
Woof.
So the title of this article is that they're hawking the family silver, which that is that they sold the rights to the Aston Martin name to the Aston Martin Formula One team for £50 million. Interestingly enough, Lawrence Stroll is the owner of both of those. Both Aston Martin and the Aston Martin racing team. And the Aston Martin racing team has become incredibly valuable since Stroll has purchased it. So he's making a fortune on that if he should choose to sell it. And Aston Martin corporate has gone from bad to worse. And it's an interesting deal because they were renting the name for £20 million a year to put Aston Martin's name on the race cars. And now they just bought the rights forever for $50 million. So that's kind of an insider deal, maybe.
Yeah, there's no other way that makes sense, in my opinion. Like, why would you give up your naming rights for what is, in the scheme of a company, not a lot of money? Like, this wouldn't even balance their books.
True, but so, they just need money.
I guess so. It just feels so desperate.
They need money right now. However, I think I know how to fix them. One of the big problems with Aston Martin, in my opinion, is not that they don't make good cars. They make awesome cars. They make incredibly beautiful cars. Yeah, they've been using a lot of AMG engines, but so what? So do a lot of other manufacturers. And honestly, that's a really good engine to use. I mean, heck, they were using Cosworth re-engineered Ford engines 2 decades ago. So, McLaren used a BMW engine. Pagani uses AMG engines. Like, what's wrong with Aston Martin doing it? Like, that's not a knock on them.
I think, though, maybe this is just nostalgia, which influences maybe a lot more of our decisions and our opinions than maybe we care to admit. But a Cosworth tuned Ford engine sounds a lot more like it belongs in a British car than a German engine. And I think we've seen this trajectory where a lot of the German brands have been so successful in creating performance cars. It's in a sense, to me, it almost feels like putting an AMG V8 into an Aston Martin is like saying just LS swap your 944. Like, yes, it's an easy, good answer, but it feels like it has less soul. And I feel like Aston Martin should have soul, which maybe just means that they break a lot. I think that's what soul means in cars, actually.
I don't think that's their problem, though. Because if they can recover their reputation in terms of reliability, I think that's a step forward. Their problem is depreciation.
Ah.
So Mercedes AMGs depreciate like crazy. BMW M cars depreciate like crazy. Nobody seems to care, and it doesn't affect BMW and Mercedes, because they sell so many cars, they can absorb that. But where Aston Martin's competing, they're competing with Porsche, they're competing with Ferrari, and they're competing with Lamborghini, Bentley. Bentley's depreciate like crazy, but Bentley and Rolls-Royce have figured out their marketing, because those owners just don't give a rip about depreciation, which is baffling to me.
Well,
they're just buying them to have the latest one.
And I think you reach a level of so much money. Doing all right over there, Doug? I've heard whiskey can do that sometimes.
That was a mic drop.
Train of thought.
Yeah.
I do think that when you get to Bentleys and Rolls Royces, though, there's a level of net worth or income that means that depreciation doesn't
correct
matter.
Yes.
Money
clients. Sure.
Yeah.
But where I think Aston Martin is losing people now, they were plagued by other issues in the past, is the idea, which has really only happened the last 5 years, but it's become absolutely a prevalent idea, that I can buy a special car and not lose money. Because if you buy a special Ferrari, you won't lose money. Now, they're run-of-the-mill cars. Their Roma, their FF, the Puro Sangue, all that stuff is going to drop like a rock. But Ferrari has built this cult brand to where people don't care because, well, you're buying that so that you can become, have Ferrari status and buy the really special stuff, which goes up in value.
It's that allocation. It's a drug.
Porsche's anything reasonably limited now appreciates as soon as you buy it. And again, if you buy a regular car, okay, well, you're getting in the family, you're being able to buy other cars, and the people buying the Macans and the Cayennes and Panameras don't care because those are just appliances. But the special cars, the GT cars, the turbos, people expect to make money on. So that is a normal expectation for people. It's a dumb expectation, but it's a normal expectation that if you buy a special car, you won't lose money. Enter Maserati, Aston Martin. They drop like a freaking rock. And I think that's a very real consideration for people looking at new Aston Martins. Even for me, I've looked at the new Aston Martins going, I would buy this. I don't like new cars. They're too big. They're techy. They're not manual, but I love it. They're just some of the most beautiful new cars on the planet. And I go, man, sticker price is like 420 grand. That means it's going to be 200 in a couple years. I'm just like, not going to do that.
Well, that's so much money to lose.
It's so much money, especially for a peon like me. But even the people who can afford to lose that are calculating, going, well, if I buy a Porsche GT3 Touring, I can make 100 grand on it. So Aston Martin, I think, needs to fix their depreciation problem in order to attract those buyers, because the cars are awesome that they're making. They're making, we're not going to beat that dead horse. But in order to do this, because they are making some really special limited production supercars. But again, it's kind of like McLaren. They'll sell them to whoever will buy them. So that's why a lot of these new collectors have just everything McLaren, right? Because they can't buy a Ferrari, but they have money. So buy McLarens. So they need to become viewed as exclusive, such that people will buy other models in order to get into the club to have their really special stuff. And I think the way that they do that is to start with the last 20 years of special cars. Because, and I've been saying this for a long time, Aston Martins, on the whole, are undervalued relative to their counterparts. So you look at the Aston Martin Vantage V600, twin supercharged friggin' monster fat fenders, gorgeous car from the early 90s. Tough to put a value on them because almost every auction in the last 2 years went reserve not met, which tells you that the expectation of value for people, you know, trying to sell them is not there with the buyers. You know, the buyers are just not paying up. Aston Martin DB7 GT, 64 manual cars in the US. Compare that to a Ferrari 550, which I would argue it's better than that. Ferrari 550s are 200 to 250K all day long. A DB7 GT is 50 to 80. Aston Martin Vanquish, first gen. That was early 2000 supercar. That is a supercar, and it has been completely forgotten. Granted, part of that is because of its crappy early single clutch sequential manual transmission, which was notoriously unreliable. But you can pick up a bad one for 40 and the best one in the world for like 90. A 599, anybody? It's like those start at 150 now. And I would argue that the Vanquish is far more special than a 599. And a manual 599, good golly, $400K-$500K. Now, Aston Martin is doing works conversions of the Vanquish to manual, six-speed manual gearbox. And I think it costs about 30 grand to do those conversions. And they're selling for around about 100K, plus or minus. Those should be $250,000 cars. Then you have like the Zagato-bodied specials. Oh. You have the DBAR1 what's the one that did the V12 Vantage with the Zagato body on it? I don't remember what it's called, but you have some very limited Zagato specials with Aston Martins that are a relative bargain.
The Vanquish shooting brake Zagatos.
Yep. Yep. Then the newer stuff, you have V12 Vantage, DB9 stick, DBS. Okay. So Aston Martin needs to start buying these up or incentivizing their dealers to buy these up, hoard them, and drive the stinking market up. And part of what they should be doing from the manufacturer level is taking cars like the DB7 GT and or the Vanquish. So what I would do is I'd start with the Vanquish and do a recommission. A lot of manufacturers are doing these recommissions, not even manufacturers, but like Canepa is doing 959 SCs and they're charging 3X, well, not 3X, probably 2X what a regular 959 would go for. And modified cars used to sell for less. But these companies, these aftermarket companies have branded themselves as making the cars far better than original through these recommissions, to the point where people are looking at like Carrera GT recommissions and they're saying they're paint to sample. Well, no, they're not, because they weren't one of the original paint to sample from Porsche, but they're getting a premium anyway and calling them paint to sample. So if Aston Martin bought up every single friggin' cheap ass Vanquish for 50 grand, took them back to the factory and started doing recommissions on them with 6-speed manual gearboxes, updating everything on them, fixing the weak points, you know, doing some modernization stuff, Apple CarPlay, et cetera, and then offering, you know, repaints and custom colors, they could probably charge 350 grand. Like, I would be tempted to pay a $250,000 plus for a, you know, recommissioned new from Aston Martin manual Vanquish. That is a heck of a lot of car.
And it gets you into that, what is so hot is just like the like analog cars from the 90s, 2000s, and 20, and even dipping into the 2010s. So capitalizing on that, it's part of the reason why some of those aftermarket companies can charge so much, because it's getting an experience that literally cannot be manufactured today.
Correct.
With today's manufacturing laws. And I think you've touched kind of on something else too, is when you think of Porsche and Ferrari and Lamborghini and Bentley and Rolls, it's, they have a heritage that they seem to stick to. You know, the Bentley and the Rolls is the opulence and the, and you know, you don't care, you buy it because it's the best.
Mm-hmm.
Porsche, there's the motorsport, there's the care they take to continue making parts and the reliability. They really ground themselves on that. Ferrari, it's everything with the brand, the motorsport history, the values of their cars. And it, when I think of Aston Martin, I don't know what I would consider their brand, their image. Mm-hmm. Their, like, who is Aston Martin? And they're making a bunch of like really expensive one-offs or like low production runs. Like the Velour is incredible looking, but like it was incredible and then it went away. And I like, I don't know if any are on market. Like, are they trading? Who does anybody care?
There's a couple that traded hands afterwards, but.
And like the Valkyrie, I went to an IMSA race at Watkins Glen last year. The Valkyrie sounded so good, and it, because it is a screaming V12 and a pack of like six cylinders. And I love flat sixes, but still, like the hearing a V12 on the racetrack again was so good. But it's mm-hmm. not competitive. It's at the back of like every pack in every race it's in, and it sucks. I don't know why that is. It could be balance of performance. It could be maybe it's just a bad car. I don't think so. But like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they need vision. And what you touched on with Ferrari and Rolls-Royce is part of what they do well, too, is the after sales. They create such an incredible luxury experience ongoing, both in their service department and through, you know, racing and different stuff like that, that, you know, the people at that net worth level are paying for experience and status and luxury beyond just what's in the car. And I don't think Aston Martin is really doing that. They're just trying to sell cars and they're struggling. And so I think if they started and bought up Vantage V600, DB7 GTs, DB Air ones, Vanquishes, some of the Zagato specials, the V12 Vantages in a stick. I mean, there's not even that many. Like they could buy 500 cars and recommission them and start driving the value up on those. I'm not saying they should do collusion or anything illegal, but we all know that they're shill bidding. I mean, just there just needs to be a few auction results for cars like that that set the new market, that get people's attention. I'm not saying how they should do it, but it should just happen, you know, because that's happened with, I mean, if used car dealer speculators can single-handedly drive the market up on yeah. certain segments of cars, why can't Aston Martin, who has the brand heritage and the resources, well, don't know if they have the resources right now, but take that $50 million bucks that they got for hawking their name to Aston Martin Racing and, you know, build some value into your classic cars, because there's so much room for upside there to catch up with the Ferraris and the Porsches. And the Aston Martins are absolutely every bit as good, if not better. If not better. I think the V12 Vantage and Vantage S are probably some of the greatest cars of the 2010s. just full stop, period. And the DB7 GT is like just completely overlooked. And like the brand loyalty is there. And the fact that I think I ran, like I tried to buy up all the DB7 GTs a few years ago and I bought one. I couldn't find, nobody wanted to sell them. Half of them were still with the original owners. Like they just, they never, ever, ever come up for sale because people love them so much. And the V12 Vantage S was the same thing. With the help of our technical advisor, Dan, I went through all of the VIN numbers of all the S manual roadsters and manual coupes, and literally 33% of them were still with the original owner. That is a huge,
massive
number.
Wow.
33%. So Aston Martin has those like high net worth loyal customers, but they're just, they need to expand to, you know, get the guys who will buy a new Aston Martin every 5 to 8 years that will buy it instead of a GT3 Touring or instead of a Ferrari Roma or instead of a Bentley, because I think they're the better choice. But to do that, they've got to build the value in the classic cars such that people will start to go, oh, well, maybe my cars won't depreciate as much. And then maybe they won't actually.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Aston Martin should control their own market, but what did Porsche do?
There's also a level of, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If like people don't want their, like if there is a perception that these are valuable, their values don't go decrease or depreciate, then that almost becomes true once you reach a critical mass of people that believe that.
Correct. Correct. Perception is reality. I don't think you need to do that many transactions before it starts to just like, it probably wouldn't cost them that much in the long run, because once they start buying these up and built the hype, then people would pre-fund it, or like they wouldn't have to underwrite any losses or anything like that. It would just naturally go bonkers. So, well,
maybe you should buy Aston Martin, Doug. Or get promoted.
You know,
to their CEO.
If I had bought Carvana stock 2 years ago, I could buy Aston Martin with the results. Maybe Carvana should buy Aston. No, Doug.
Can you imagine taking
Carvana,
delivery?
Carvana would put the ass in Aston Martin.
Whoa! All right, what's next? What do we got?
Maybe David Brown should buy Aston Martin.
Fixed it once,
right? I mean, he's kind of doing the, what I think they should do. He's doing the speed back thing. Like, anyway, well, I've been, we'll get to the shrewd negotiator, our special segment. We love ragging on kit cars. I've been engaged recently to find a yellow 355 Berlinetta for a client. I'm sorry, F355. That distinction is important because the F355 is manual. 355 is F1. Nerd knowledge there. And this particular one came up on Facebook. 99 Ferrari F355. $27,990. Up for sale is the best Ferrari replica ever made, dimensionally proportionate to the real thing. All the molds are taken from the actual real car. If I had a dollar for every time I heard that, but yeah, it still didn't look like a real car. Okay, this car was completed in 2008. 1 of 40. This is number one by a company called Aerodynamics. This is the AD 355, renowned as the best 355 replica ever produced, sporting real Ferrari wheels, real Ferrari glass. Oh, that's expensive.
God, you could have bought a 355 the cost of that.
Front grille, front hood splitter, emblems, and muffler. This car also has a real three-piece rocker set. Therefore, when you open the door, it's not a huge gap. Everything is filled and done extremely professionally. The engine is a 3.8 supercharged V6, 3.8 liter, you already said that, out of a Pontiac Grand Prix, always a Pontiac, as well as the interior. Over $40,000 was invested in building this vehicle. Sounds like a real thing with a supercharger engaged. 99% of people cannot distinguish that this car is a replica. Car is the exact dimensions matching the real thing. Except it's not, because just like every other one, when you look at it, it looks like it got squished in the middle. That said, this is probably one of the best replicas I've ever seen in photos until you look at the interior or the engine bay. I mean, it's absolutely a Pontiac Grand Prix interior, which is just too bad.
Well, it's better than the fake engine that we saw when
podcast. It is definitely better than the fake engine in the Lamborghini Aventador. Inventador. So if you want a car that 99% of people can't tell the difference, you can buy this 355 kit car because all the molds were taken from the real car. Yeah, that's what they all say. Ugh. That's what they all say.
Oh, I can't. This David Brown Speedback thing is.
Isn't that hot?
It looks. They're like making them, it seems, and selling them, but I can't quite tell.
They are making them and selling them.
They've been making them since like 2014.
It's like a nouveau Aston Martin DB5.
Yeah, I kind of. The interior is kind of meh, but it's all right.
And they're charging, was it £500,000 for them? If David Brown can sell these for £500,000, Aston Martin can redo the Vanquish. Heck, they could even get Zagato to like rebody some of the Vanquishes and do like one-off coach built modern Vanquishes. I'm just thinking here. We're cooking with gas.
I will say the Speedback Silverstone edition with like, I don't know how I feel about the wire wheels. I'm not really convinced they look all that great.
Yeah, it's
the Silverstone one is better though.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something about wire wheels that just don't work on like a new car.
Yeah, I've seen a couple people do wire wheels on a Z8 and it just doesn't. I know the Z8 is like a heritage retro thing. Speaking of heritage retro cars.
See, would you just look at the Segway, Doug?
I didn't even plan for that Segway, but here we go.
Oh, yeah, wire wheels on a Z8 is no good.
That Segway was so good, Ethan wasn't even ready for it. His eyes got wide.
That's right, Ethan. Got to keep you on your toes. Over there taking a nap.
I thought it would be fun to decide which are the best and worst heritage and retro cars, because there's a whole lot of them. Seems like the late 90s, early 2000s was the heyday of, well, really, car manufacturers running out of good ideas. So they went back to the archives and said, all right, well, let's just update this.
Yeah. People are nostalgic for this.
Yeah. And the trend has continued, not in such proliferation as it was back then. And I think Chrysler kind of started, they kicked that off through the 90s, man. Everything Chrysler was making was retro. But what are the winners and losers as they've aged a second time? What do we think are the best heritage designs, retro designs, whatever?
I'm going to start with a newer car. The Alpine A110.
Oh.
Is just
pulling in a very sort of choice. Obscure one out there.
Chef's kiss.
Yeah.
I would probably buy one if they came in a stick and if they sold them here.
Yeah, if they came in into the U.S.
Well, yeah, the U. Okay, so that's the first one. If they came into the U.S. and then also they had a stick, I'd buy one.
Ford Thunderbird. That was an iconic one. That's good. The 2002 Ford Thunderbird.
That was one that came to mind for me.
Yeah. Everybody loves to hate on those because they're like not a sports car or whatever, but they're not supposed to be. They are an old man car catering to the person who remembers their 55 Ford Thunderbird, but can't squeeze in under the giant frickin' steering wheel or like underneath the hard. I mean, that is one of the hardest cars to get into. So,
and they captured the design in like a very good,
brilliant
mid 2000s way.
I think they've aged very well.
Yes, they have. They even have the porthole window in the hard top. I think that was just a bang on design. And it was like really close to the concept, too. So I appreciated Ford for bringing that one out. That's one of my top picks. Porsche Boxster.
Ooh, is that a bad one? Are you sorry?
No,
are we still
I think
positive?
That's good. I wasn't sure if you'd be like, wait, that's not a retro design, but it really is.
It's supposed to be based on the 550, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's kind of cool. It's hearkening back to the 550 Spider, maybe even the 718 RSK, yeah. You know, those mid-engine race cars, hence why the second, fourth generation Boxster was a 718. Yeah. I really like the Boxster anyway. It was kind of wild design language when it came out. And I guess all the car, I mean, BMW did the Z3, Mercedes did the SLK, and Audi did the TT, all like wildly yes. different, but really pushing the boundaries. But I love the Boxster. I think that's a good modern interpretation of a classic design.
I do kind of wish they would have made it closer to the concept, though. The concept Boxster looks...
The concept Boxster was hot.
So cool.
It was like Carrera GT-esque. Yeah. So good.
So good.
So good. PT Cruiser.
I'm going to actually give that a thumbs down.
I kind of like it. I don't think they were good.
I like that it exists, but it's not for me.
I'm going to give the PT Cruiser a thumbs up and the Chevy HHR a thumbs down.
Same thing. But again, what I have to say is I don't have many thumbs downs because I am so happy that these exist and I have fond memories and nostalgia. There it is again, of them kind of driving around. But there's a lot of them that I just wouldn't touch. The HHR, glad it exists. I think it's bad.
Also, the HHR was like, ooh, Chrysler did that 10 years ago. Let's try this.
Oh, yeah, it's the same guy designed them.
Really?
100%.
Nice. Yep. He literally just put a bow tie on it and leaned the car back a little bit. Chrysler and joined GM. Dan, our technical advisor. Perfect. Let's see.
The Volkswagen New Beetle.
Oh, I big didn't even have up. That one on my list. Thumbs that was up. Awesome.
Big thumbs up.
That was so cool when it came out.
Oh, like, yeah. Those things back when they came out in like 97, 98, that was a big deal.
That was
a big deal.
Yeah.
It was such a
real close to the concept, too.
And it was just a perfect modernization of what a Beetle is. Oh, so good.
All the reliability to match.
Well,
the original Beetle's more reliable, right?
Yeah, probably, actually.
Yeah.
Wait, are the early Beetles not reliable?
They just are. They're not a car that will 100% start up.
They're not necessarily quality, but they're easy. Yeah. They're simple and they're easy to work on.
And like that was such a big hit that the Volkswagen New Beetle was a cover car from Midtown Madness. They had those everywhere.
And there was a Nintendo 64 game.
Yeah. And Beetle Adventure Racing. Oh, so good. I'm going to have to get Ethan photos of these for the video. My goodness.
Plymouth Prowler.
Thumbs up.
Begrudgingly, yes.
Ethan is... What? You don't get an opinion, Ethan.
I don't get an opinion. Okay.
Watch his mic. We should unplug his mic.
You don't get to be hating on the Prowler.
I think we'll come back to my opinions on the Prowler in our Patreon episode this week.
It should have been made into a hot rod. It was trying to... So the Ford Thunderbird, people knock because it wasn't a performance car, but it was... appropriately following what the original Ford Thunderbird was. The Plymouth Prowler was emulating OG hot rods that were all about performance, and it nailed the look other than the giant rubber pool noodle bumpers.
They just forgot the performance part.
Totally forgot it.
Yeah, who needs
totally
that?
Forgot it. And they didn't really create a platform that was easy to modify. That's like, you know, here's something modular.
Yeah.
Go to town with it. It just, I mean, I guess it was perfect because the people who were building 30s and 40s hot rods back in the day were of the age that they didn't want a real hot rod. Oh no. Perfect. I know what they were doing. I haven't driven old hot rods, but everybody I know that has them says that they drive absolutely terribly.
Oh,
they're essentially built for either looks or noise or straight line speed. Like none of them are actually balanced and good to drive because they're kind of like homemade.
Yeah.
So there we go. The Prowler was terrible.
On purpose.
On purpose.
What about the Nissan Pike cars? The Figaro, the BE1,
I was gonna say
the S-Cargo, the
thumbs up.
The POW.
Thumbs up for me.
Big thumbs up.
Yeah.
And what I like is they weren't necessarily modernizations or a retro future design of specific cars. It was like an amalgamation of like this style car. What would it have looked like or been made like in that time? Love them. So cool.
Toyota did it too. Toyota Origin, the Toyota Classic.
I'm getting educated.
Dodge Viper GTS. And for that matter, RT10, Dodge Viper.
Now, well, these Toyotas are interesting, Dan.
Pop quiz. Does anybody know what the Dodge Viper was originally styled from, like the front end styling? So you look at the GTS, blue with white stripes, and you think Shelby Daytona Coupe. But that is not what the original inspiration for the styling was, even though the blue with white stripes Viper GTS is like, oh my gosh, it's a Daytona Coupe.
Yeah.
I knew this at one point, and I forget it right.
Oh my gosh, Dan Doucette knows more than you. Facebook page dedicated to Dan Doucette knowing more than us doesn't know more than me. Now, granted, I just learned this, so I was down at the Revs Institute. Cunningham C2R.
Yep.
So the designers studied that car and like the bulbousy front end and wanted to recreate that same like look over the humps as the driver's looking out, and they studied the C2R in order to get ideas for that.
These Cunninghams are so cute.
Yeah.
Cunninghams are awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
How about every Porsche 911 ever made?
Oh, big thumbs up. Hoo-hoo, right here.
Because you don't think of those as retro cars, but it's the same functional design.
They all look the same, as Jeremy Clarkson has said many times.
1964.
BMW Z8.
Yes. You beat me to it.
Love it. Big thumbs.
I like the Z8. Big thumbs up. I put the Z8 and the SLS Gullwing in the same category because those are two cars that weren't... they weren't like a continuation car. It was just we did an old one once and we're going to do a new one once. And that's it.
Yeah.
There's an old one. There's a new one. And there's like no in between, no continuation. Yes. The SL line, I get it. It continued, but like the 300 SL to what came after was not the same cars. The 190 yes. SL, there was a natural progression from that car to the rest of the SL line. So you had the SL 300 SL Gullwing, iconic 50s, dare I say, supercar, and then you had the SLS Gullwing, like perfect tribute to that car, old yes. one, new one, BMW Z8, BMW 507. It's like the 507 was a car that they made once and would never make the likes of it again, and the Z8 was the same thing. Like you can't do that three times. You can't continue it. It's just plop right in the middle. Let's make one of the most gorgeous cars of all time. Let's do it again 50 years later.
Yeah. Peace. We'll be back.
Yep.
How do we feel about the Jag S-Type?
No.
Yeah, probably not.
It's so bad. So ugly.
No.
More talking about like continuation ones that have just hard to say they're retro, but just the fact that they never stopped, there was no break or anything. Mini Coopers.
Yeah.
That gets a thumbs up for sure. Me.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting about the Mini Coopers, Dan, is they made the same looking car forever.
Yeah, for like 40 years.
And then they did the drop.
Yeah, there was no break. It just...
Burp. Well, like, Volkswagen did the same thing with the Beetle, just not in Germany.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, the Mexican Beetle. Yeah. Ford GT.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Very good.
Thumbs up.
Winner, winner. Now, we're not talking about the 1718 GT because that is not retro at all, but the 05-06 Ford GT might be one of the greatest throwback cars.
Yeah, agreed.
And if they hadn't made the 1718, you could put that in the same category as the Z8 and the 300 SL. It's like
Ford was
old brother, young brother.
Ford was cooking in the 2000s because the Mustang, the 05 Mustang, was so incredible. And they're still making Mustangs that look kind of like that now. Like,
definitely have fixed the design. I think it was good, but then looking back, that one hasn't aged as well as some of the others.
And I think the interior has aged terribly. Every time I look at the interior of an 05 to like a 14 Mustang, I really don't like it.
Well,
I'm like, that's just because they're plastic. It's so much acres of
plastic.
We
will look at the new ones and say the exact same things in 5 years because there's just a lot of plastic. I think they had the good idea because they had like the faux billet stuff and they were trying to make it look old. So I don't know. It was a good idea, but you just have to remember that it is a Mustang. You can't expect too much of those interiors.
That's very true. Same thing with Corvettes.
Dodge Challenger, the 08 Dodge Challenger.
I feel like we can group the Challenger, the Charger, and the Camaro into the same, like, they're all that era of them remaking
Challenger
stuff.
Did it first, though, and I think they did it best.
Yeah, I don't think the Charger did a great job. I think the Charger was kind of like, you brought back the name.
Mm-hmm. Dodge Magnum. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Throwback wagon. Here's my least, one of my least favorites. The Lamborghini Countach.
Oh, yeah, that was ridiculous.
The Aventador rebody for $2.5 million. I don't think they nailed it with that one. I think it's better looking than the Aventador, but that one just, I'm like, eh, they could have done better.
Because it's a body kit on an Aventador, it just doesn't feel the same. Like, it's not its own car.
Right. The Miura concept was one of the greatest modern styling exercises of anything, and that would have been awesome if they had made that. Unfortunately, they didn't. But yeah, Countach for me, thumbs down.
A very new one that just came out recently, the Renault 5 E-Tech, is an EV, which is not my favorite thing in the world for like a sporting hatch. But I do think, and Doug, I don't even know if you've seen a photo of one of these. It looks like an old Renault 5, just a very modern version of it. And I really appreciate how much they stuck to the assignment. They didn't make it look too, ugh, it like looks legit. I just won't buy one because they're not here and I don't really feel like buying an
EV
right
now. They're not here in a stick. Yeah. Also, just not here. My final one, Roof CTR Anniversary.
Oh,
thumbs up. Love it. Love everything Roof does. And I love that they made a new carbon fiber friggin' bespoke chassis monocoque blah blah brand new version of a super iconic car.
And they're like in-house built air-cooled flat six that makes so much more horsepower than it should.
It's like, oh, that could be a 911 like Singer on steroids, but no, it's built from scratch by Roof, not a 911. I don't know how they get away with that. Alloy Roof must have had a killer deal with Ferdinand Porsche back in the day. I don't know how he got the rights to use that body. But anyway, somebody smarter than me knows. Dan, do you know?
No.
Somebody does. Anyway, Plate to Sample brought to us by Soul and Spine. This is where we read off a vanity plate, likely a user submission, and the other person has to guess what car it comes on based on what the person is projecting about themselves. Tyler, I'll let you go first.
Ooh, okay. First for you, Doug, from Arun the Driver on Instagram, a Driven M.
A Driven M. I'm going to say that is like late 90s M Roadster, or maybe even a clown shoe.
I would actually prefer this plate on that car.
I was thinking that it was an enthusiast.
It is an enthusiast.
Driven, and I was going for full on. Okay.
But it is. Oh, goodness. Let me get my generations correct. I think.
I don't need the codes.
I think it's an F80 M3.
Oh.
It's much newer. It's an enthusiast. It's a sweet car. Yeah, it's an F80
M3. Can't judge. We don't know their hearts. But yeah, I'd like to see that on a more obscure car. All right, cool. Let's see. No ex-wife. This is from John in North Carolina. Thank you, John.
Corvette.
No ex-wife. Nope.
Honda Odyssey.
Nope.
Because they have a wife and kids. is it a Mustang?
Nope.
What is it?
It is a Mercedes C63 first gen.
I would not have guessed that.
Well, they probably still have kids, so they have to pick them up for their
That was my
visitation.
Honda Odyssey.
Okay, the ex-wife has the Honda Odyssey.
Ah, okay. But there's no ex-wife. The current wife has the Honda Odyssey.
No, wait a minute. No ex-wife. No, he's never married. I'm all confused. No ex-wife. So he's never married. So he should have like a Ferrari.
Oh, yeah.
What's he doing?
I assumed that was just a weird, like, I still have my wife.
Well, yeah, maybe
I thought he was saying he's still married.
Yeah. I guess that's a weird way to say I have a wife. It's a really weird way to say it. It confused all of us. Maybe get a new plate, guy. If you do have a wife, you might soon have one, and then you're going to regret that plate. I don't know.
Is this the first time we've ever told anybody to get a new plate on this?
No, we've, I mean, in so many words, that's an odd one.
Doug, for you, no DUI.
Well, hold on. Maybe he's saying like, hey, I'm single. Like maybe he's like 40 or something.
What?
And he's single, but he's trying to advertise he doesn't have baggage, right? Like, hey, I'm actually, and he's got the back seat. So it's like, I'm game for kids and whatever. It's like his Tinder call out of
interesting.
You know, I'm a eligible bachelor.
See, I was thinking you were going to take that the Mark Spence route of like, you could be my future ex-wife. Don't have one yet.
I don't know. I get a new plate.
All right, let's get out of this. Doug, no DUI.
That better not be one of the DUI plates in Ohio. No,
that would be amazing if it was.
Well, so this guy has no ex-wife. This guy has no DUI. Probably because he doesn't have an ex-wife either, because ex-wives drive you to drinking. Okay, you wanted to get us out of this. We got right back into it.
Really, so, and this car is not worth it. It's
like... Chevrolet Beretta.
No, but man, that's a good guess. Nice. No, it's a Toyota Highlander. I just like the plate. It's
all right. That seems like a very sensible vehicle to go with a sensible plate, like no DUI. Although
his
maybe
no DUI was sensible plate. It's like, whew, thank know. God, dude doesn't drive while drinking.
Well, maybe it's a moral statement of like you shouldn't have a DUI, but it also could be like I'm really good at getting out of them.
It's a brag,
or he's a DUI lawyer.
Oh, and he'll get you out of him.
Yeah.
Like it could be like a lawyer up, the Better Call Saul thing.
Right. All right. This one from, I think, Tony Krincevic, I think. C-non-ball, cannonball, Ohio plate.
What is that going to be on? Did he actually send me this plate as well, Dan, a mutual tech?
Maybe I'll give you a hint. You've guessed it already tonight.
Oh. A Honda Odyssey.
Yes!
Oh, no way, really?
Yes.
Whoa.
The irony is, you might say that's a terrible car for that plate, but Yummy Dietz and his son and Ben Preston did a very fast time in a Honda Odyssey with a like trailer hitch mounted fuel tank and a porta potty in the back. They did like 31 and change hours in
Can
a Honda
you
Odyssey.
Imagine you got to really be careful with what you eat if there's a porta potty in the back of your cannonball car. I mean,
better than not having a porta potty,
so,
a catheter,
ooh,
or whatever.
Boy, no gas station jerky for you. For you, Doug, flat with a 4 instead of an A.
Flat. Oh, with not flat 4. I'm like, well, Porsche 718 Boxster, flat. Okay. Porsche 718 Boxster.
No.
Subaru, anything.
Yes, it is a
WRX.
A WRX wagon.
Yeah.
It's a good plate. I like that a lot.
All right.
Thank you, Jack H.
All right. For you, I spotted this one myself. Q Ship 1.
That's got to be like a reference to something.
Well, Q-ship, also known as a cuboid, is a decoy vessel, special service ship, or mystery ship. Heavily armed merchant ships with concealed weaponry.
I like that you had this like in the chamber, ready to satisfy my confusion. What is it, like a Honda Accord? A silver passenger vehicle?
No.
God, I have no idea. I'm blanking on
W211 E350 wagon.
Okay.
That's a good one.
I know.
Because I have heard the term Q-ship before. And
I know.
Interesting.
I really wish it was on an AMG because that would fit the definition of Q-ship better.
Ah.
Or a debadged AMG even more.
Maybe I should get that for my car, although Q-ship 1 is already taken, so I guess I need Q-ship 2 or 3 or whatever. But yes, that should be on a maybe they down badged it.
Oh, they might have.
Because it is a decoy. I got to look at the photo. No, it's... no, regular exhaust, definitely a base E350, but that would be cool. Down badged.
Yep.
Anyway, legit. Love that plate.
Next one comes from another submission through switchcast.live, Air 404 ER 404.
ER 404. Mm-hmm. ER 404. No ER.
Is a plate buddy.
No ER. I hardly know
her. Nice. Nice.
Ethan laughed at one of my jokes.
That's funny.
I don't know. I feel like this is gonna be like obvious. I'm going to feel really dumb. No, he's making a face.
No. Nope.
Okay, nah. I give up.
Yeah, it's an Audi S4. I don't think it fits the car. I just like that it's another 404 plate. Like, Air 404 is not found, like the HTTP error code for not found.
I mean, it's not an S4. I don't know.
No, the ER.
Yeah, I know, that's what I mean. No.
And it's like a recent S4.
Maybe
it's
they're
like
an ER doctor or something.
I don't know. That might actually maybe my
I would
brain
not
was...
have guessed that plate from that though. Interesting. All right, for you, from Damon Whiting. Yowza.
Okay. A Corvette.
Nope.
Yowza. Is this like a smart car? Something
nope.
Silly?
Nope.
It's a very serious car.
Yeah.
A Lamborghini.
Nope.
What is it?
Lincoln Mark LT. Pickup truck.
Okay. All right.
Good plate. I knew you'd never get that one, though.
No, like, I don't think that's related to the truck. Now, last one for you, Doug, from Brandon B. Rated M.
BMW.
Yes, it is an E90X cab. I don't, what is it, 2, 3, 1?
Well, you didn't let me guess it wasn't an M.
Oh.
But it's not an M, right?
No, it is. It's an M3.
Oh, I thought you said an X something or other.
Well, it's the E, what is it? Because the E90 is the...
Yeah, E9X is like the generic, yes. Yeah. E93 would be the convertible.
Okay.
M3 convertible, E93. All right, cool. All right, thank you for not putting one of those on a non-M or like an M340 factory upbadged car. Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah. All right, last one from Aaron Tulin. Biznass. BIZNAS. Biznass.
Strictly Biznass here. Yukon. Denali.
No.
Ooh, that means I'm really far off. This is a like an E-Class.
Nope.
Biznass. Is this an Altima?
I think more like risky biznass.
Oh, it's a 928?
Not so serious biznass. No. But
what
wild.
Is it?
It is, looks like a Viper Green 992 Carrera GTS Aero Kit.
Oh, there's lots of things happening there.
Yeah. Pretty. It's the business. Yep.
It is the business.
All right. If you want to submit plates for the plate game, send them to me via Instagram on @DouglasTabbitt or to Tyler on switchcast.live. And of course, just visit switchcast.live for all of your switchcast needs. Old episodes, old blogs, very old blogs. We don't do blogs anymore, but yeah.
What's a blog?
I wanted to talk about hot takes tonight. But you said you don't have any hot takes.
I think I have one, but Ethan will tell me it's probably lukewarm.
lukewarm. All right. Well, we can skip hot takes. We can do them in Patreon. We'll try them on the Patreon audience and see how they go. I have one. I said we could do anything we wanted as long as we could connect it back to cars somehow, because everything we talk about here has to be somehow connected to a car.
Well, and I think I've worn out my like main hot take, which is that gatekeeping can be positive. And like, I'm sure maybe somebody will hear this for the first time and have their jimmies rustled over that. But like, I don't know. I have good reasons. We just talk about them a lot. So it's not like it's not earth shattering.
Well, speaking of gatekeeping,
let's talk. I'm so in.
we've beaten this topic to death yet not solved it. And I think, I was down in Naples a couple weekends ago for Cars on Fifth, and I was hanging out with the Paradise Region Gruppe crew, and they also run Cars and Coffee 239, which is a big, well-run Cars and Coffee event down there. and they absolutely gatekeep. They have to, because if they don't, the Corvette guys literally will show up every month early and take the premium spots, which they rotate and say, like, okay, it's not just like who knows us or whatever. They go, okay, like last month it was four GTs. The next month it'll be something else. The next month it'll be Corvettes. So they have a rotating like feature display,
which it doesn't
matter
like.
How early you show up, but they still have to gatekeep in a sense. Everybody's welcome, but not everybody's welcome in the featured spot because they want to, you know, curate that display.
Proving my point. I love it.
But what Scott does, and he's Mr. Gatekeeper.
I want to meet this
guy. But what he also does, because he'll have kids come in and clapped out Mustangs and Integras and whatever, and he's like, listen, I remember those days. And we've talked ad nauseum about how do you encourage the next generation of car enthusiasts without, like, bringing the riffraff in, right? Like,
yeah.
How do you foster respect and a good culture, but also not be snobby and invite those people to be included in what you're doing and appreciate it? Because if you are too inclusive, then the good cars and the old school car people just won't come at all. And if you're too curmudgeonly and snobby, then your club will die, as you're seeing with a lot of, I mean, the Cleveland is just a walking picture of how not to do the automotive car scene.
Yeah, it's all bad. It's all bad.
Oh my gosh.
But I think we were having a discussion earlier that I think actually might, I don't know if it's an answer, it might be an explanation. So, like, you have made the point that when you go to a car show, you want to see cars.
Yes.
So you want to make sure, you want whoever curated or put on or, you know, made the call at the entrance, no, yes, no, to gatekeep a little bit so you have interesting cars to look at. And that's one end of things, which I think makes a lot of sense. The other end of things is just wanting to hang out with the boys, which was what I mostly prefer to do, where you, like, the gatekeeping there is like invite only, or it's just the friends and we're here to like hang out with each other with our cars because we're passionate about it. But like that doesn't need to be open to the public. That also doesn't mean you can't be into cars or can't like be at the same coffee shop and be like, hey, that's really sweet and hang out. Like, we're not kicking people out, but
you
it's
know
like,
how I gatekeep.
You just not.
No, I have car things at my house, at my outlaw suite, and I invite everybody and just nobody shows up. So it's easy.
I feel like you're attacking Dan and I right now.
No, you guys show up. I just like, I'm golfing. I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. It's so hard to get people to just come out and hang out. You know, they'll go to events where they can be seen, but it's, no, I'm not. Anyway, so back to Cars and Coffee 239, because I was actually on my way to a point, but, you know.
Detour, roadworks.
Yeah.
You know.
Took a long detour. This is my brain. So what Scott does is he'll randomly pick somebody that shows up, like a young kid in a car that he goes, hey, looks like you put some work into this car, wrenched on it yourself, whatever. He'll talk to him a little bit as quickly as he can as the, you know, hundreds of cars are filtering in. And he'll be like, VIP, go park up with the really expensive cars. And nice. It'll absolutely blow their mind. Because they're like, you want me parked next between these two Ferraris? And like he did it to a kid with an older Mustang or whatever. And the kid was like beside himself. And, you know, that was like just the fact that he was invited to do that gave him naturally the respect of like, I'm not supposed to be here. But at the same time, like, we're car people and I get to be proud of my ride. And people are coming up to it and asking me about it. And like that ignites that passion.
That's awesome.
It's so cool.
I love that.
I feel like that's one of the ways to balance. I mean, that's one scenario, one example, one person. But I'm like, that's really cool because they maintain exclusivity and they maintain a standard of behavior. Like, there's no shenanigans at their events. And they'll kick people out. Like, he will absolutely kick people out.
Oh, love it.
But also invite people in of like, let's foster your passion for cars. So,
cause that's what like we're here for. That's what matters.
Yeah. Cleveland ain't happening yet. Even so, what was the latest? So we have the big Stan Hewitt Father's Day car show every year. Big deal car show. And apparently, and one of the ways I think it's not automatic, but one of the ways to ruin a good car community is to introduce profit to it or commercialism. Yeah. You can do commercialism. You can have a profitable car event, community, whatever. But I think that also is a good way to quickly ruin something that's good. So one of the people who had been involved with running it started their own corporation and then sold themselves back to the Stan Hewitt organization as an event planning company for profit to now run this car show that they've been running the whole time as a volunteer. Ugh. So Man. Then a whole bunch of people got ticked off and were like, well, we're not going to do that. We're going to start our own show down at Hale Farm. So they started their own Father's Day show. So you had a friggin' church split and they're going down there. Well, the original person who started the event company registered the domain name like halefarmcarshow.com out of spite. But then these curmudgeons that broke off and started the new one basically don't want any cars newer than 1980 there. So what? They're doomed from the get-go because they're like, no young cars. We want classic cars. You know, we want.
Holy moly. Look, I'm all for some gatekeeping. That's a bit much. Like, come on.
It's Cleveland just, I mean, it's the picture from Cars and Coffee to the Father's Day car show. Cleveland is the picture of how to destroy a car community.
We just can't do it for some reason. I don't know why.
My gosh. I'm just going to come over to my house. You have to drive a stick shift car, but no gatekeeping.
Yeah.
No. So I'm headed to Amelia Island for the Amelia Concours in a couple weeks. And speaking of splits, oh my gosh.
Oh, the
couple years ago,
the Moda situation.
Sotheby's got ticked off and split, and they started Moda Miami, which is crazy to me because it's 2 weeks after the Miami Concours. So you have the Miami Concours, Moda Miami, and then the Amelia Concours, which Hagerty now owns. I've not been, well, I went the first year of the split, I think. But I've not been in a couple years. So I'm curious now because Amelia was getting too big. So now with the competition of Moda, I'm curious if that's going to put a dent in it. Like, I'm curious to experience Amelia and see how it is. Like,
well, I feel like we went to the year of the split and the year after.
Yeah, we did, if I recall correctly.
And yes. RM was still there the first year, and then the second year, Moda was on the same weekend. Now they're on different weekends, but it seems like Moda's been doing a better job of marketing themselves and seems to be the draw for all the bigwigs.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. I had more people ask me this year if I was going to Moda than going to Amelia.
Hmm.
And I had like at least six ask about Moda and four for Amelia, you know. Heck. So
how much are you charging for autographs?
Not as much as Carol Shelby.
Doug, can I get a selfie?
So you laugh at Naples. Oh, I meant to tell you this at Cars on Fifth. A guy pulled up from the Porsche dealer and he's like, hey, you're the Switchcast guy. I love the podcast.
Nice.
Heck yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Not Ben Wiki, not Cannonball, not whatever. Not the Mexican stuff.
Not even like you're the Switch Cars guy. Like you're the Switchcast
There's
guy.
So many things that, yeah.
Nice. Anyway, congrats.
So shout out to you, Tyler.
Wait, what do I have to do?
And somebody
that?
Said, oh, you're from Ohio. How's Casey Butt shooting? No. I have been asked that. It's like we live in the same house or something, you know. So anyway, we love to play a game at... No, people think that like everybody from VinWiki just like hangs out all the time.
It's like those reality, like The
just
Bachelor.
Just like if someone says... just like if someone says they're from New York, everyone assumes they're from New York City.
Right.
Same exact thing.
Yeah. Or like if I say I'm from Maine, people are like, oh, do you know...
Well, Doug, I think
Jimmy.
You actually
I'm like,
do
yeah,
know
actually
Jimmy.
I do. That's my cousin. He's married to my sister. No.
Everybody's cousins up there. It's real weird.
So anyway, me and my friend Dave, who's been on the podcast before, is a ultra high net worth collection consultant. Very, very smart guy. We like playing a game. It's his game at the auctions. We play over under. One of us picks a number at these high end car auctions, and you know, cars are selling for 6, 7, 8 figures. And we say, okay, pick a number. And we pick, the other person picks over, the other person has to take under. And it's a dollar bet. Okay. So whoever is right, get a dollar. If you're actually bang on, I think you get $2. You know, real high stakes betting. But it is absolutely hilariously fun because you're betting on, oh, this car's estimate is a million to 1.2. It's going to sell for 950. All right, I take the over, you take the under. All right. And it's very competitive because we consider ourselves professional car valuers. So it's more about the ego thing. Like, it is painful to lose a dollar because you were wrong. And it's like the game you and I used to play with Bring a Trailer. So
that was a good time. We should bring it back.
So we're going to do a little over under because there's some wild estimates high and low on the auctions at Amelia Island, both Gooding and Broad Arrow. So we thought, okay, let's look at ones that we think are overvalued, undervalued, and see what we think they're going to go for, where the deals are going to be. So, Tyler, let's start off with Gooding auctions. What do you got?
So do you want me to like say a number? Or are we just talking about like what I think is going to go bananas or not bananas?
Yeah, relative to their estimate, I think is a good.
You say Gooding. My brain is either producer is producing
Gooding, Gooding Christie's. So, yep.
I think so. At Gooding, there's a Roof 928, which I did not know existed. And it's the only one commissioned by some dude who used to be like the president or CEO of the Samsung Group ages ago. Roofs always just seem to go bonkers. And I think because this is the only one, yes, a 928 is not as desirable as a 911 or a Yellowbird of some sort of BTRC, you know, whatever. I think that's going to go pretty nuts. And they have a very healthy estimate on it of, pulling it up. I didn't pull it up fast enough. They're estimating $400,000 to $500,000.
Wow.
I wouldn't be surprised if it goes above that. Roofs always go like just
but the
crazy.
Fact that you didn't know it existed means a lot of other people didn't know it existed.
That's true.
It's a 928.
It is.
I'm going to take the under.
You're
going to
take
one.
The under?
I'm going to take the under. Yeah.
Do either of you guys recall what the 928 from Risky Business sold for? That was big money.
It was around a million. Okay,
I was thinking like how many 928s have beat their estimate, period. And that one comes to mind.
Two million. Okay. I was wrong.
Now that's got the movie car
Risky
situation.
Business. Yeah, it's.
But man, I mean, this is a hot 928, but it's definitely, I just think it's the only one, you know?
Yeah.
What do you got?
I've got the Carrera GT. It's 1800 miles silver over Ascot. No reserve.
What's the estimate?
The estimate is 1.5 to 1.8. And there's no stories on this car. Recalls done, clean Carfax, all the research I did, there's no reason not to buy it. I think that estimate is way low based on some very recent transactions. I mean, if you look at September sale results, that's dead on. But that market has popped recently. I think that car will go, if we were playing, if you set the over under at 2.3, I would take over.
Really?
Yes. Yep. I think that one's going to pop off.
I'll take under. I'm guessing it's going to stall at 2.
Okay. But their estimate is low. Maybe that's marketing. They're getting everybody excited.
With every other time we look at this, estimates are like insane. Like they were drinking while they came up with them.
The other one that I think is low at Gooding is the Diablo 6-liter. This is not me wanting them to go up in value because we've talked about how it's bad when cars go up in value. But there's a 7,000-mile car in Jewish Racing Gold. Estimate is $550 to $650 based on just a recent Bring a Trailer transaction. I think that estimate is out of date. If we're setting the over-under at $750, I'm going to take the over. At $100,000 above their high estimate, I think that car will go quite well. Also, I think it's not too long before we see a public sale of a 6 liter over $1 million. I think Tamarian has already sold one privately above that for a really spectacular example. We've seen a couple of them sell for high sevens around 800. So yeah, I think this one, despite the less desirable color combination, will also do quite well.
I think that the XJR 15 that they have is going to go below estimate.
I probably agree with you there. What is the estimate on that one?
900 to 1.2.
Ooh, that's a low, low estimate.
It is pretty low, but I feel like as much as I adore XJR 15s, although I don't know what they're like to drive or live with, every single time I feel like I've seen one, it's never met its estimate. Because these are rare, these are highly special, but I just don't think they've got the same panache as, you know, some old Ferrari or Porsche would.
True.
So it's probably going to stall. This is like a very no mile example. They make all of these. It's
most
impossible.
Of them are no mile examples. The other issue is some of these have hidden stories. I know that a couple of years ago, one sold at RM, one sold at Broad Arrow, and I think one maybe also sold at Gooding, but there was one at each auction and one of them sold for like 200K more than the other one.
Yeah.
And that was because people knew things that we as casual observers didn't know. So I think it depends highly on what people know about this particular example. I'd probably take the over on 900K if you think it's going to go below the low estimate, but I don't think it's going to get to the high estimate. So I'll take the bet on that one.
We shall see.
One I think is high. They have a 968 Turbo S at Gooding. Both auctions, Gooding and Broad Arrow, are expecting to sell the first $1 million 968. And it may happen, but to me, that's just, that's crazy.
A clarification, I guess, between the two is it is a Turbo S at Gooding, and Broad Arrow has a Turbo RS race car, of which there's only like
three.
It's only a race car. This livery is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's like really stored. Even then, I still don't think a 968 is going to hit $1 million.
Yeah.
That seems insane.
The race car is great. Provenance, it was raced by, you know, Jurgen Haywood or whatever. And anybody? No. Oh my gosh. Mixing up Porsche factory driver names. Come on. You're supposed to catch me on that. I would say that the race car goes for more than the street car. But
yeah,
the crazy thing is looking at comps on Turbo S's is this is the nicest one to come up in a long time. And they have sold for like 450 to seven for lesser examples. So this might just based on the hype, because somebody wants to pay the first $1 million for the first 968 might go. I'm bullish on this one because I think it's crazy. Just $1 million for any 968 is nutty to me.
I think the price for the club sports versus the regular ones is nutty. Like
yeah,
I owned one.
I would
it was
love
amazing.
To own a 968 club sport, but not for 100K.
No. Like it's trying to think of my 968, but with less weight sounds awesome, but not for 2.5 to 3 times the price.
Yeah.
So I even the Turbo RS, I think it'll probably get to like 900. Like it's going to get close, but I don't think it'll hit a mil.
Yeah. How about Broad Arrow? Do you have more at Gooding or?
No. And
okay,
I've already
Broad
done
Arrow.
My Broad Arrow car. One of
what
them.
Was your Broad Arrow
the
car?
The Turbo RS.
The Turbo RS.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. My Broad Arrow car is the under, the one I think is undervalued, Ferrari 360 Challenge Stradale. In Rosso Scuderia, which is the orangey red, no stripe, 3,800 original miles. Estimate is 600 to 700K. Currently, as of our recording, by the time you hear this, it will have sold. But there's a 2,600-mile one on BAT. It's already at 800K with 3 days left. So we've seen some crazy transaction results on Stradales lately. That market just exploded overnight. I had a really good line. I'm gonna back it up.
Put her in reverse.
The Stradale market exploded like Osama bin Laden was manipulating it.
What? Okay.
I don't know.
Let's put her back into again? First. No, Doug. No. Just okay. Carry it. The only way out is through.
All right. if anyone's driving and listening to our podcast, they just veered into the left lane. No, I think this car is 850, 900K. So if you said the over under 800K, I'm taking over. I think they underestimated that
one. Is it the red?
Yeah.
Challenger Dolly?
Yep.
I mean, probably, but I just don't want to think about that. That depresses me.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's insanity.
It's nuts. But we're just talking reality. What is going to happen is it's going to go for more than their high estimate. And the one that I think is too high is the 997 GT3 RS. Their estimate is 450 to 550. It's a white car. Yes, it has buckets and ceramics, but it also has a couple light aftermarket modifications and has 17,000 miles, which that seems low, but in terms of the collector world, that's not low mileage. A lot of these cars were tracked. I'm interested to see this car up close to see, is it really, really spectacular example, or is it a, you know, tired 17,000 miles because,
has it been like 17,000 track miles?
A lot of these got tracked. A lot of them got tracked. And I just like, that's crazy to me. That doesn't seem in line with market with what we've seen. It's not an aqua blue car. It's not white gold graphics. It's not like 5,000 miles. I think that's like a high threes car. I think they totally missed the mark on that estimate. I know 3.8 RSs are nutty, but it's just not, the market's not there and it shouldn't be there. This is not a market maker car. It's just another GT3 RS. So,
I do think so. I'm really leaning on the roofs bring a lot of money situation. So there is a 2001 roof RGT that Broad Arrow has. That's like this crazy orange color that has an orange and red interior business.
Both Gooding and Broad Arrow have an RGT.
They do.
There's only 17 of them.
And two of them each got one. So this estimate is 250 to 280. I think it'll probably just get above the top estimate. This is a crazy spec that has been owned by the same guy.
Does not have air conditioning. Is that correct? Or is that the other one? One of them doesn't have air conditioning, which is a huge, I think that's a huge,
wow. There's only five
strike against it.
RGTs that came to the US.
Unique I've sold, color. Three of them. Really? Well, no, I sold the same one three times.
Oh, okay. Well, that doesn't.
That one had air conditioning. I think the last time I sold it was for like $85,000.
Well, because they used
maybe
to
90.
Because they used to just kind of be in line with GT3 prices. And
well, because you couldn't. It was really hard to sell people on why it was better than a GT3.
No, this one has air conditioning. I think it's the Gooding one.
Okay,
that doesn't.
So that one is a funky. Funky color
like
combo.
Funky like red and tan
which
and
I love,
full leather interior. It looks awesome.
I'd be all buckets. Over that car for $150,000, but not a quarter mil. Because for that, I'll just buy a 996 GT3.
Yeah.
And I think I've heard those are pretty good. If anything, they took the 996 front end, if it was possible, and made it worse.
They did.
Like, I love the RGT, but they missed on the front end.
Why did you take a very curvaceous car and put big squares, rectangles in the front bumper for vents? Like, it doesn't flow. But I do love this color. The interior is sweet. I think it's going to, I don't know. Roofs are so hot.
All right. Well, that brings us to the props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars. I said this was going to be commercial free, but we got to read the Switch Cars thing.
We do. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy and sell cars that we like ourselves. So check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing when available. Find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, what do we have for a pick of the week?
Well, we don't have much left because we've been selling cars faster than we can restock them. So I had to check stock right before we went to recording with this 2000 Ford Mustang Cobra R.
Ooh.
The third in the Holy Trinity of Cobra R's, 93 Fox Body, 95 SN95, and 2000 New Edge Cobra R, with the most bonkers hood design, I think, on any car of its era, belying what is underneath. 2,150 miles. It has the coveted R book, the pirate manual.
R
book. Yeah, it's a really nice car. So that one is a super awesome thing. And it doesn't have a fuel cell like the 95, so you don't have to maintain that. But anyway, our flop of the week, Ford is now charging Mustang Mach-E's customers to use the front trunk.
Doug, that sounds like clickbait. Please explain.
No, that's not clickbait. So they apparently found out through some study, or maybe just through, I don't know, everything's electronic, so they just have data on how many times people open the front trunk. But they found that people weren't using the front trunk. So they're like, okay, well, we're just not going to put the liner in. And we're going to decrease the price. But they only decreased the price $185 and then added $495 to the option. So it still costs you $300 more or whatever to use the front trunk. So if you want to use the front trunk that they previously installed, the standard is $500.
How much money could they possibly be making from these companies? Would squeeze blood from a rock if they could. This
the
insane.
Irony is, like, good luck selling the Mach-E in the first place. They're really struggling to sell these. Oh, I don't know if this is an additional flop. Apparently, I've got to verify this because I heard this. Apparently, Hertz struck a deal to buy a bunch of Mach-E's and bring back like the Shelby Mach-E thing.
Are they going to paint them black with gold stripes?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Come on.
Oh, this is old news.
Why?
I didn't realize this. Oh, this is very old news. I'm sorry. I'm not even with it.
Well,
Hertz couldn't even sell them. Hertz slashes prices on their special Shelby Mustang Mach-E, some with just 3,000 miles. So they couldn't even, they took what an awesome heritage of the Rent-A-Racer and slapped the friggin' gold stripes on an electric car because Ford couldn't sell them, and now Hertz can't sell them either. Hertz so good. Yep.
Boy, these look terrible.
Prop of the week, honestly, I just have to do a shout out to both Paradise Region Gruppe and DuPont Registry for hosting myself, Arnie, and Ed, and the Cannonball Cars at Cars on Fifth in Naples. That's a fantastic car show that I've heard about many, many times. I feel like everybody in Northeast Ohio has a second home in Naples. Well, everybody with means anyway. And everybody's asked me if I'm going, ever been there. Pretty awesome car show with some amazing cars, like 25,000-30,000 spectators. Ooh. And they parked our Cannonball cars right in the midst of all the Ferraris.
Nice.
Which actually perturbed some Ferrari owners, which was hilarious.
This is just a silver passenger car.
But they made us feel like rock stars. It was so much fun. Arnie and I got to pick best of show for the Porsche group. And we passed by all of the paint to sample 992 GT3 RSs. There were many.
As there are.
And we picked a 1974 911 Outlaw build car that was really, awesome. Really well done. So, but anyway, that was just thank you to them. That is a fantastic show. Lots of different like VIP areas and food and just some real heavy hitter cars and cool events around a hangar party the night before. They inducted Miles Collier into the Automotive Hall of Fame and, awesome, awesome weekend. So if you want an excuse to take your wife to Florida and then also, oh, look at that. There's a car show.
Whoa.
It's a great weekend. Usually it's very, very warm. It was a little cooler this time. It did get up to 75 degrees, but it was down to 40 at night. But anyway, so not typical Florida weather, but fantastic event nonetheless. And we really appreciate them featuring the fraud Taurus in the Ferrari row. So I guess I got to manually read the closing because we're back to our like old-ish format. So thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders. and guest appearance by our technical advisor, Dan Doucette. Produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on the show are exclusively held by the people pontificating in that particular time and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors, or those people, potentially, the next day. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. Ethan, are we still using them for theme music?
For the intro and the outro music, we are, except for on Patreon.
Ah, okay. All right. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform, and you can get exclusive bonus content on Patreon. Check out switchcast.live for more info.